Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. I'm going to talk about some of the great spy, counter spy cases in history and draw an analogy with what's going on today and talk about the mass media, mass Hollywood manipulation, which has resulted, among other things, in many surface level truthers and even people that are aware of the alien non-human presence on Earth control system, has led many of them to vilify one of the greatest combat commanders in history. You hear this all the time. General Curtis LeMay is who I'm talking about. And it was left-wing commie journalists like I.F. Stone and the director of choice for the Luciferian elite of this planet, ironically, the Luciferian shape-shifting elite of this planet, their director of choice, Stanley Kubrick. So the combination of academia, journalism, Hollywood, hating on General Curtis LeMay has led many of you surface-level truthers to despise LeMay without knowing the first thing about him. He was one of the greatest combat commanders, not only in American history, but in world history. And boy, could we use a guy like General Curtis LeMay now. If LeMay was in charge of the Air Force, he would not be watching the Air Force deliver thousands of raping, acid throwing, child bride taking, combat veteran Afghans into America, among other groups of invaders. That would not have happened on LeMay's watch. They would have had to bump LeMay off. If he even had a whiff of something like that taking place, it would never have happened. I'm also going to talk about strategic deception, not just on a planetary level, but on a cosmic level. The very real possibility exists that this whole Project Bluebeam drivel that we keep hearing about was instigated by the aliens or their hybrid minions themselves. What better way to detune somebody from a very real possibility? And when I say alien invasion, the sub rosa, increasingly overt alien takeover has been going on for thousands of years. And in geological timescales, a blink of an eye. You hear a lot of these people on the internet talking about, oh, the reptilians took over 6,000 years ago or began this planet there 6,000 years ago. Well, maybe, maybe not. I know that they've been around a lot longer than that, millions and hundreds of millions of years. This is just the latest iteration, the latest takeover of Earth, if you will. They've chosen to go this route, allow the planet to be heavily populated, and then begin to cull it down radically. And several hundred years to these beings is absolutely nothing. We got to get out of this linear time mode where people don't think any further than their next paycheck or the next month or the next sporting season, whatever. They don't think in terms of decades, centuries, millennia, and millions of years, epochs, eons. Think big, scale it up. And when you look at geological time, in comparison, 4th of July, America as a grouping has only existed technically since 1776. And yes, I know about the Articles of Confederation, and after America won its independence from the crown, supposedly. Then they went on to form these constitutional conventions and hammer out eventually what became the most priceless document in modern world history, let's say. What's codified in the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, to me, that's as valuable as anything that could be decrypted in ancient Akkadian, Babylonian, Sumerian text. Just Bill of Rights alone. As far as it means to us as a species, not just for America, but the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence for people all over the world, what it means for us, that's huge. Point being is that the sub rosa subterfuge and takeover of the surface population of the human race through mass hybridization and installing their most hybridy, entity-infested host in all the key areas, every culture, all over the planet. That, of course, had long preceded the creation of America, had long preceded the creation of Rome, long preceded the Persian Empire, etc., etc. So this is, again, this is just the latest iteration. But what if conditions are such on the surface, and this is entirely predictable, the reptilian overlords and other ET races We must not think of all these ETs as always being in cahoots. All the bad guys work together against all the good guys. It's not that simple. We don't even see that on planet Earth and all these tribal corporate groupings and what have you. The strategic deception is such that a lot of you truthers out there and surface level types, you actually think Stanley Kubrick is some kind of a whistleblower. I mean, this is so ridiculous. I'll elaborate more later on in this commentary. But the notion that someone like Kubrick and others like him are trying to leak out information, show you what's really happening. No, it's more like shoving your faces in it, is what it amounts to. I had just seen The Shining all the way through for the first time, and I sat there with a critical eye and noting all the hardcore ceremonial, magic, sadistic child hunting crap that was going on in that movie. The dialogue, the screenplay, what Jack Nicholson was saying as he was chasing his own son through a maze, right? A snowy maze. There was so much symbolism there, but it's not exposing what's going on. It's giving you an idea, which doesn't require you to be in an astrally hijacked dreamscape, okay? They don't have to go that way. They're showing it to you in the form of a movie. That mansion or that resort that Jack Nicholson, spoiler alert if you haven't seen The Shining yet, but that resort that Jack Nicholson was the caretaker of, the previous caretaker had wiped out his own family and apparently killed himself. In that retreat, that resort, they'd had many big time parties there. Two presidents had stayed there. A lot of political bigwigs stayed there. So what they're basically saying in cinematic form is, yes, these big resorts, these are where we conduct all our grisly, evil practices, basically. And the place was haunted from A to Z, this resort in the Jack Nicholson Shining movie. Point being, and elaborate more on it later, is Kubrick was putting you momentarily into the minds of them, shoving their minds into your mind as you're watching it. You're seeing like rivers of blood and hallways and just all kinds of demonic, demented crap. The kind of stuff that a lot of targeted individuals, survivors of cult abuse, various mind control programs, hardcore alien abductees, et cetera, what they've experienced many times over, in and out of the astral dreamscape. The Shining is putting that in your face and saying, this is what we do, this is what we're all about. I'd only seen bits and pieces of The Shining over the years. Never seen it beginning to end. No, I didn't even see it beginning to end this time. I saw it in about two or three segments. But just sitting there watching it, all the elements were there. The spirit world, the demonic world, interacting with the day-to-day world in the form of this host entity-infested guy that Jack Nicholson played, the caretaker, right? Apparently, Duvall, Shelley Duvall, who played his long-suffering wife in that movie, she had something akin to an emotional breakdown and never did another Hollywood movie ever again. That's what I heard. And anyway, I'll get more into this later, but the notion that some of you think that Stanley Kubrick is some kind of whistleblower because he's throwing out crumbs like Eyes Wide Shut and A Clockwork Orange, somehow some of you think that Kubrick is being entirely truthful and he has humanitarian and altruistic motives at heart. This is the same guy who hoaxed the moon landing. I've said many times, I believe the powers that be got to the moon and elsewhere in the solar system. I just don't think they got to the moon in the way they said they did. And Kubrick played the pivotal role in pulling off that whole worldwide hoax. So you surface level truthers are going to lend credence to a guy who conned the whole planet about the moon landing, and when that same con artist director, the satanic elite's director of choice, when that same director lampoons General Curtis LeMay, General Jack D. Ripper is what the character in the Doctor Strangelove was referred to as. Clearly, he was like a caricature of General Curtis LeMay. All he was missing was the cigar, really. So you're going to take the word of a guy who lied to the entire planet and believe that General Curtis LeMay, who the Lampoon character was based on, modeled after, and then for the rest of your life, you're going to think LeMay was some kind of war-loving nihilist demon. That just shows how simple-minded a lot of these surface level truthers are. And again, I'll elaborate more on this later, but this talks to the different levels of deception, of strategic deception, of psychological warfare operations. This cycles back to my point about how, in all likelihood, it's the hybrid minions at the instigation of their full-blooded alien reptilian overlords who are ultimately behind the Blue Beam scam. If you look at a historical analog, the Europeans' mad dash to create spheres of influence, carve up colonial empires, exploit the human and mineral plant resources of all these different countries, Africa in particular, is just one example. It was a mad scramble to acquire all those assets, let's say. Who's to say that in the wake of a ruinous nuclear war and ecological meltdown has nothing to do with a bogus climate change scam, bogus carbon emissions scam. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a worldwide global ecological catastrophe wrought by nuclear war, biological war, chemical warfare, etc., etc. On top of the alien terraforming agenda that's already going on with the chemtrailing, aerosol spraying of our atmosphere, etc., etc. Who's to say in the aftermath of that, or in the process of all that, one or more alien races decide, okay, there's enough chaos and confusion on the surface amongst the survivors of all these various human tribes and ethnic groupings. Let's swoop in and grab what we could grab. It could be humans, it could be mineral resources, whatever the case may be. And it'll be more than one alien race doing this. Some of these ET races that were in fear of reptilian retaliation for encroachment upon this planet, they may decide, well, conditions are ripe, things are so crazy on Earth right now that if even if the reptilians notice, the reptilian overlords notice we're doing all this, there's not much they can do about it. And also take into account the wars of gods and men. This goes back countless millennia. It's been written about in numerous sagas and folkloric tales around the world, the Norse legends, Greek mythology, just two examples of the gods fighting amongst themselves. We see this in the Sumerian texts, we see this in the Babylonian, Enuma Elash in particular. These ET races fight against each other, completely at variance with the New Age love and light. All ETs are warm and fuzzy spiritual beings. And there are still those types of people that are continuously interviewed on a lot of these UFO documentaries you'll find streaming online, streaming TV. We know disaster capitalism, how it works on the surface. A natural disaster, real or contrived. Think of the Haiti earthquake, which in all likelihood was set off by some kind of seismic weaponry, some kind of scalar technology, Tesla technology, whatever the case may be. And then the Clinton Foundation moves in, the military moves in, kids are taken away en masse. What we're seeing in Ukraine now, classic example of that, where thousands and thousands of kids are turning up missing, because that's what happens in these places that have been hard hit by some catastrophe or other, or a series of catastrophes. This creates ideal conditions for the human traffickers to swoop in, and everything is relative. These aren't just human traffickers of human beings, these are reptilian human hybrid traffickers of human beings. Let's get that part straight. And grab as many orphan kids or just lost kids as possible. Who's to say that various ET groups may decide to do something similar? And not just ET groups off-world, although they may have long-standing or short-term bases here on Earth, short-term as far as length and duration of being here, but also the subterrestrial, subterranean beings. They may decide to come up to the surface and say, okay, now's our chance to just grab as many of these people, these kids, as possible. It should be noted that Many of us, myself included, have had recurring dreams over the years of alien invasions. This long preceded any talk about blue beam or any of that nonsense. Long preceded that. Long preceded this D'Souza FBI guy parroting the same blue beam meme that we're gonna be dealing with a fake alien invasion. Long before that, I would have recurring dreams of huge spherical ships, globe-shaped ships, hanging low, motionless, very low altitude, hovering right above ground level or a little above it, very low in the atmosphere. And there would be a lot of these. And Barbara Bartholik always called the spherical-shaped craft, or at least some of them, she referred to as soul repositories. And I independently confirmed this also with Helga Moro, who was actually taken on board one of these spherical shaped craft by this demonic entity. Told this story before. I'm not going to get into it now. But Barbara always referred to these globe shaped, spherical shaped craft as soul repositories because in her research, she determined that the souls of the recently deceased or people that were just killed and murdered were oftentimes, or at least sometimes, sucked up into these spherical shaped craft. And here I am, and I'm probably not the only one, dreaming about these huge spherical ships hanging low in the Earth's atmosphere. And other types of craft, other shapes of craft have been described in these invasion dreams. A large rectangular craft, not a smooth surface, a regular kind of, I wouldn't say bumpy surface, but there's a lot of appendages, a lot of square shape. Rectangular protuberances, let's say, on the surface, just coming down through the permachemtrail haze, very large, and just setting off a panic down below, accompanied by when they, and this is a dream that I had, when they came down in this big rectangular craft through the permachemtrail haze. In the process of doing that, all of this kind of, I wouldn't say confetti, I wouldn't say paper litter, something akin to it was fluttering out of the sky, falling down. And just coating the surface with a lot of this white fluff. Those of you that are old-time UFO researchers, you know the term angel hair, where craft, and this was reported every now and then by the old-school researchers back in the day. Sometimes, for whatever reason, whether it's the propulsion system of the craft, the radiation, whatever the case may be, a byproduct of the passage of these craft through our atmosphere created an effect known as angel hair, wherein this kind of gossamer, kind of silky, spiderwebby stuff just fell down out of the sky, much of it collected by ordinary passersby or researchers. And we called it in the old days angel hair. In this particular dream, when this large rectangular craft with the uneven protuberance covered surface came through the permachemtrail haze, headed straight down to the surface, causing a mass panic. All this fluff stuff was falling down to the sky and coating the ground, along with litter. And I'm not the only one who's had these invasion dreams. I've spoken to another number of people who have had them. Barbara Bartholik had worked with a number of people back in the day who either were shown by the reptilians themselves, or had dreams, astral dreamscape, stage managed dreams, whatever the case may be. But I'll pinpoint and highlight the times where people were shown by the reptilians themselves what was going to happen in the future. And what was going to happen, and this came up again and again in Bobby's research. Barbie spoke to a number of different people who told her the same thing, people who didn't know each other. There may come a point in the future where these large craft will land. Barbie referred to them as cattle cars. And then all these zombied out, pacified humans will be herded on board and taken away. And the ones loading them on board were not greys, they weren't insectoids, they were reptilians. And so they'll be loaded onto these ships and carted away for consumption purposes. And people may say, oh, why would they do that? They've got all the nanotech in them, all these people, they've got all the graphene. The aliens can take that out. Indeed, like I've said before, that whole mass treatment rollout, ultimately the genesis behind all of that, the inspiration behind all of that was non-human. Absolutely no two ways about it. That they would f contrive to put in so many of these treatments, so-called nanotechnology, graphene, etc., etc. That's not an accident, and a purely human consciousness wouldn't even conceive of such a thing. It has to be a consciousness hell-bent on eradicating the human race. Point of relevance is the strategic deception in this instance is to detune truth seekers, truthers, activists, people on the trail for information about the New World Order, let's say, to detune them from the fact that an all-out overt takeover of this planet is actually within the realm of possibility. Now, we have seen on numerous occasions, happened in New Mexico, and this is referred to in the book Project Blue Book, written by Air Force officer Edward Rappelt. And he investigated and knew about a case. I think it was in Farmington, New Mexico. I'll have to check that. But the eyewitnesses on the ground just saw literally thousands of craft in the sky. But we've seen things like that before. Mexico City and Mexico, where video footage shows hundreds, if not thousands, of craft in daylight in the skies. They look like clusters. I mean, they were so close together, they look like clusters of fish eggs in the water almost. This to me is, well, it can be variously interpreted as a show of force, or it could be interpreted as, well, they just needed a staging area for whatever reason, and they didn't care who was on the ground and who saw it. Okay, such is their technological superiority and indeed arrogance that they can do these things and get away with it. Nobody asks the simple question, why doesn't the Air National Guard send interceptors after all these chemtrail so-called planes, which are not really planes in many instances? I mean, they're flying right over restricted airspace at White Sands, New Mexico, and other places, similar places. They don't get challenged. They don't have interceptors scrambled after them. And getting back to the concept of a show of force, there have been many occasions when an alien presence manifests itself in such a way as to show the human military, in particular the human air forces, how weak, powerless, and impotent the latter were. In Belgium, we had this mass wave of triangular-shaped craft that had the Belgian Air Force totally flummoxed. The operations director of the Belgian Air Force went on TV and showed video of radar of one of these craft, its ability to descend rapidly from a very high altitude to a low altitude, and vice versa, and go back up to a high altitude. And he said with much understatement that these capabilities that are exhibited, displayed on these radar screens, show a technical capability beyond the normal envelope of capabilities of known terrestrial craft. And that was an understatement. Now, I know those are those, and now there's some fake whistleblowers saying, take my word for it, I've been to Area 51 and I've seen the drawings, all triangular shaped craft, all, he said, all are man-made. That's utter nonsense. And I've said before, I'll say it again, the triangle, like the disc, is a universal aeroform. It's a universal, indeed multiversal, aeroform shape. There are a great many, countless civilizations that utilize a triangular-shaped craft as an aeroform, or a wedge-shaped craft, or a almost, well, like a parabola boomerang-shaped craft. There are a number of varieties. And this also leads to another notion. You hear this from surface-level types all the time. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, actually. And that's saying something where the surface level types are concerned. They said, well, referring to all these stories of crashed flying saucers and crashed alien craft and the alleged shoot down of alien craft, etc., etc. This is a common lament or whine you hear from surface level types. Well, if they're so advanced as to be able to get here from another star system, then why do they keep crashing onto planet Earth? That doesn't make sense. See, this implies an infallibility as far as these civilizations that are technologically advanced enough to travel interstellar as well as intergalactic throughout the cosmos and beyond. It implies an infallibility factor, wherein their counterargument is if their technology is so advanced, it shouldn't malfunction. Okay, that's a statistical impossibility. The countless, underlined three times, countless advanced civilizations which routinely traverse interstellar, intergalactic space, and even can go into other universes and other dimensions. The notion that all, underline all, in an absolutist sense, all of these civilizations have developed infallible, impeccable technology which never malfunctions, which never requires maintenance, which never breaks down. That's a statistical impossibility. That is so patently absurd, I don't even know why they keep chirping along these lines. If they're so advanced, why do they keep crashing? Everything of a mechanical nature in our multiverse is prone at some point to malfunction, to breakdown, and would require maintenance or repairs. We've seen this in the Lonnie Zamora case. Lonnie Zamora was a New Mexico state trooper. He heard a loud explosion. He was in the process of chasing after a speeder. He stops. He hears the hears the explosion in the direction of a known dynamite shack. In the old days, they kept explosives, for various construction companies in certain well-known places that law enforcement was aware of. He heard an explosion. Lonnie Zamora turns his state trooper car around and heads towards the sound. Long story short, he comes across a landed egg-shaped alien craft on landing legs, on tripod landing extensions, if you will. Two little ETs outside examining the hull of the craft, right? And then they get into the craft. And then the craft lifts off, emits flame from beneath the craft, emits another loud roaring explosive sound. Lonnie Zamora dives behind a large boulder for safety, and then the craft slowly flies away and then shoots off in the distance. Rendlesham Forest may have been an example of one of these craft, alien craft, having problems landing there, materializing there actually. In Capel Green, the clearing at Rendlesham Forest, and the ETs may have needed to repair the craft. That's a possibility. The Cash Landrum incident, when up to 23, and each surface level types, you're so intellectually lazy. You're so smug. You think you know everything because you followed the science. When your seventh grade science teachers assured you that aliens didn't exist and the distances between interstellar space was too vast. You followed the science, and oh, when they added in the ridicule factor, oh, you mean it's permissible in polite society to laugh at people who've seen UFOs, who claim they've seen aliens or been abducted by them? Oh, you mean the system is encouraging us to point at them and laugh? I'm down with that. I'm all for that. Because deep within us, we want to mock and ridicule other people, don't we? We want to look down on others, don't we? We want to make ourselves feel good and scale it way down to the bottom. Oh, these normies, they don't even recognize, when a con is right in their face. And you surface level truthers fell for the blarney about the impossibility of interstellar space travel, hook, line, and sinker. So getting back to the Cash Lanham case, and we don't know if the Cash Lanham case represented an alien craft in trouble with a fully alien crew, and it was having difficulty, and it was being followed by up to 23 double-rotored Hilo Chinooks, probably loaded down with combat troops in case this thing landed. And there's a school of argument says, no, it was more likely an alien craft being test flown by human pilots, and it strayed off course and momentarily hovered over that car. In near Huffman, Texas, the young boy who's now an adult, Colby Landrum, Vicky Landrum, if memory serves, and Betty Cash Landrum event. At any rate, this thing hovered right over the motorway, right in front of the car. Betty Cash stopped the car for some reason, and maybe it was curiosity got the better of her. She got out of her car, and this thing was emitting blinding bright light. And then she realized, oh, it's getting unbearably hot. I better get back in the car. She touches the door handle of the car, immediately pulls her hand away because her hand is singed, burned, because the metal is so hot. So whatever this craft is or what it represents, it's emitting ionizing radiation. And all real UFO researchers know that there was once a chapter of a federal firefighting manual that dealt specifically the radiological dangers of crash or landed alien craft. It specifically deals with the radiological dangers of crashed or landed or hovering, or at any rate, close approaches of alien craft, the very real dangers of ionizing radiation. And Betty Cash was an example of that. She suffered horrific radiation sickness. She eventually died. Both Vicki Landrum and Colby Landrum likewise got very sick from radiation poisoning. And again, this is not unique in the annals of real alien research, UFO research. So it's no surprise to me that there would actually be a federal firefighting manual, federal, because if you study some of these cases, what often happens when a craft crashes or is disabled or comes down and it's emitting a lot of light or it's emitting like a fiery trail or a smoky trail, the firefighters are the first ones there. It happened at Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Once again, volunteer firefighting crew showed up there in the creek bed where that large acorn-shaped craft had come to rest. It happened at Roswell, where firefighters, the father of Frankie Rowe was a firefighter. He got to the crash site and saw alien bodies and the wreckage. You look at the more recent UFO crashes, two of them, but one in particular, South Haven Park, if memory serves, on Long Island. When a craft crashed in a park and it set off blackouts and brownouts for rolling blackouts and rolling brownouts for days after the event, a fire broke out. Once again, firefighters, local and federal, showed up because a craft had come down. They don't know what kind of craft it is. They're going to go put the fire out and see if there's any survivors to be pulled from the wreckage. That's what firefighters do and first responders. Lo and behold, they get to South Haven Park and it's not a conventional aircraft. In fact, a firefighter had taken video of what he believed were alien bodies and wreckage. And the hazmat crews were there, disaster preparedness types were there. Point being is that once again, firefighters got there. So it's no surprise that in a federal firefighting manual, I can't remember what year it was, 93, 94, 96, one of those. I know some of my colleagues out there in the research field actually have a copy in their hot little hands of this federal firefighting manual. But there's one chapter in that particular year where it deals specifically with the radiological effects of being in the close proximity of alien craft. Larry Warren, the aforementioned Larry Warren, I've talked to Larry about this in depth. 5 years after Rendlesham Forest, he started suffering hemorrhaging, internal bleeding as a result of his exposure. He was examined by medical doctors. The medical doctors asked him point blank, "Have you ever been exposed to a non-shielded nuclear device?" Interesting question to ask, not knowing anything about Larry Warren's past and what he endured in Capel Green Clearing there in Rendlesham Forest. They asked him, "Have you ever been exposed to a non-shielded nuclear device?" And there are other well-known cases. 1976, Kentucky. Mona Stafford, Louise Smith, and Elaine Thomas driving down the road one night. They were accosted by a UFO. All kinds of strange effects were taking place. The landscape outside of the car changed radically. When they were in the midst of the energy field of this craft, they were pulled on board. They all were examined by ETs. And then afterwards, in the aftermath, they suffered horrific, what amounts to radiation sickness, headaches, hair falling out, migraine headaches, etc., etc. This is a very real phenomenon. So this notion that, well, if they can come here from these vast instances of necessity, they should never malfunction. They should never crash. They should never land for repairs or maintenance. Where does this notion come from? Do they think there's some kind of mythical, farcical land out there where nothing ever breaks down? Even if you're looking at these so-called like type three alien civilizations, which are super advanced, and astronomers are openly saying that there's a star out there that seems to be enclosed, partially enclosed, encapsulated within some large device. That is some kind of a mega advanced civilization. And we've seen through the SOHO imagery of the solar observatory, heliospheric observatory, which focuses on the sun, we've seen gigantic planet size and larger craft. Jaime Maussan had that video of a gigantic craft, many times the size of planet Earth, sucking up plasma from the sun for like 90 hours or something. And then after it tanked up, it fueled up, it left, it flew away. We're talking super advanced. And by comparison, I've always thought it was interesting what Bob Lazar said about the Zeta Reticulian technology that he was exposed to at S4. And once again, Lazar is not the only one that talked about the Zeta Reticulians. There have been other real whistleblowers that have also talked about the Zeta as a particular species. They look like ubiquitous, typical grays with a large head and the large black wraparound kind of eyes, oval-shaped eyes, teardrop-shaped eyes, but really, those are eye coverings. Lazar said he felt the technology was only hundreds, not thousands, not millions of years in advance of our own, hundreds, but that the advantage these Zetas had was they're from a binary star system, and so there are elements in that star system that are naturally occurring, which are not naturally occurring in our solar system, but they're naturally occurring in that binary star system, and it's probably similar to other advanced civilizations. Star systems with only one solitary star are not the norm. They're actually not the norm at all. It's more common for there to be binary and multiple star systems, but ours, because it's such a closed circuit type control system, we only have one star here, right? So we don't have all these goodies that you find on other star systems. And if you remember shows like Stargate SG-1, they're always in the search for a Naquitta, which is an alien power source element. Okay, tip there. Point being is that the Zeta's technology, as far as Lazar was concerned, was only hundreds of years advanced in comparison to our own. But boy, howdy, what a difference hundreds of years make. Because the Zetas have capabilities that far exceed any normal terrestrial technology here on Earth. I'm not talking about within the SAPS, special access programs, and the type of programs that Ben Rich, the late director of Lockheed, would be familiar with. I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about regular surface level aeronautics. And this notion of infallibility, when you look in the lore throughout Earth, the Near East, the Greeks, the Romans, Sumerians, Babylonians, they talk about the wars of gods and men. They talk about the gods warring amongst themselves. It doesn't make sense for advanced civilizations to war amongst themselves if the technology is infallible and they'll never shoot down the other side's craft. They'll never be able to destroy the other side's installations. They'll never be able to destroy the other side's infrastructure and logistics. None of that makes sense. They war for like some fruitless, pointless form of amusement because they can't kill each other. They can't wipe each other out. They can't destroy each other's technology. And we have seen video of craft shooting at each other at night in our atmosphere. And there are pictures going back to medieval times of craft shooting at each other, paintings. Again, this fallacious notion of the presumed infallibility of alien technology, but it's always with a caveat. Well, if aliens are really here, implication with a sneering implication suggesting that it's impossible for them to be here. Okay, but if they were here, their technology would be such that they would never crash. They could never be shot down. And like I said, in a vast multiverse of super advanced civilizations, with naturally occurring elements in those star systems, multiple star system societies that they live in. And the ability to make use of these naturally occurring elements that are not naturally occurring on Earth. And that they've had hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of years head start of over us. But to assume that anything that they create, manufacture, is infallible, will never run out, will never require replenishment of fuel, will never require maintenance. Like, where do these simpletons get these ideas from? It's because they're intellectually lazy. They can't be bothered to study the available information. And they don't even know the basic surface level spy counter spy history of just the Cold War. This is why they're so easily fooled when it comes to surface level psyops. Oh, look at Djokovic, the tennis player. There's these pictures of him where he's covering one of his eyes and he's doing this woo-woo hand symbol. He's Illuminati, controlled opposition. It is standard fare when someone is new in Hollywood, someone is new in the sporting scene. Oh, let's take a series of pictures. All these modeling agencies, they never know which gal that comes into their agency or their company for a photo shoot. They never know which one is going to be the next Hollywood starlet or Beyonce or whatever. Although, in some cases, the powers that be know which ones are going to be made into big stars. Point being is that if they're brand new to all this, they have no idea what Hollywood's all about, never heard of the Illuminati. They just want their big chance. Are they going to say, oh no, I'm not going to cover my eye? It's not my forte. Oh no, I don't want to do this weird hoochie coochie hand symbol, right? It's not my forte. It's not my style. No, they're going to do it. They have no idea that further down the line, if they get out of line and start talking about things that they start to notice. You see, the way you surface level truthers operate is there's no such thing as second chances. You think that, okay, if somebody was in Hollywood or somebody was a Freemason or somebody was in the intelligence community, because of the unhealed trauma and the mistrust you harbor about everything, of necessity, you're so brainwashed and hoodwinked into having this despairing, hopeless mentality that anyone who comes out, now they're saying the same thing about Jim Cavazeal, I can't pronounce his last name at the moment. Oh, he's fake. He's Illuminati. Because you look at all these pictures from way back when. And not only that, but they can say, Jim, hold your hand up. Well, why? Just hold it up. We're just focusing the camera or whatever. Take a picture of it. And then later on, superimpose that on his face. Okay, that's quite within the realm of possibility as far as photo editing is concerned. Point being is that you surface level truthers will look at these pictures. Oh, look, Djokovic is covering his eye. Controlled opposition. General Patton was writing letters to Henry Stimson, Secretary of War. Henry Stimson was a skull and bonesman. Patton was a Freemason. In the letters, Patton was writing, all we need now is a great big bloody juicy war, right? This is before America got involved in World War II. Oh, Illuminati, Illuminati. Later on, he gets bumped off because he doesn't want to go along with the Morgenthau plan to reduce Germany to a pre-industrial state. He didn't believe in all these so-called displaced persons taking over the remaining houses that somehow survived all the massive bombings, aerial bombings. He didn't believe in disarming the German military because he felt that they should have been rearmed to fight the Soviets. And he was going to spill his beans about everything he knew, which was a lot. He knew that the war in the West could have been won two, three, four times over had not Eisenhower interfered. I'm not going to get into all the details. The history is there, but don't count on these surface level historians to tell you that. And because Patton posed such a threat to the New World Order, and especially to Eisenhower's future presidency, Patton was bumped off. Bumped off. So here's a guy who's a Mason, wore this Masonic snake ring on his finger. But with you surface level truthers, nobody gets a second chance. Oh, look, there's a photo of him covering his eye. But that person could never be allowed in the future to say, yeah, I was in Hollywood for a while. I noticed how evil it was, and I don't like it. I'm going to speak out about it. No, you're controlled opposition. No one gets second chances with you people. And tell me, what have you done? What have you done, really, to look down and make all these pronouncements and all these people? We had a saying in our old neighborhood, you ain't busted a grape yet. What that meant was you haven't done anything worthy, noteworthy, to account for all this boastfulness and this presumptuousness and this smugness that you have towards others. Aliens, Project Bluebeam. You haven't even read one book, one legitimate book about the subject, and you make all these pronouncements about people. So maybe I'll save it for the members segment to talk about the spy counter spy stuff, because even at that level, it's just over the heads of so many surface level types. But point being is that some of the great Soviet defectors, Soviet spies of the past, General Dmitry Polyakov, a general in the Soviet GRU, military intelligence, Tokachev, engineer that worked in these research establishment type places in the Soviet Union, developing Soviet airborne radar, et cetera, and other great Soviet defectors. So the first GRU mole who worked for the CIA, Pyotr Popov, Oleg Penkovsky, of course, et cetera, et cetera. You contrast them, who they knew they were working for a corrupt, venal, evil, perverted system. And because they were men of integrity and honor, they decided to turn against that system, knowing full well what would happen to them. And you look at the good guy side, the CIA and the FBI, you have scumballs like James Angleton, the CIA counterintelligence chief for so many years. That guy couldn't have destroyed the CIA's anti-communist espionage capability, counter-espionage capability. He couldn't have destroyed it any more had he been a KGB mole himself. And there's always that possibility. He was instrumental in setting up a back channel with the Czechoslovakian government to acquire Eastern Bloc arms to funnel to the Haganah, later the Israeli Defense Forces. So he was already operating in these shady back channels, but he's just one example. How could an incompetent, drunken buffoon like Aldrich Ames wind up being in charge of anti-Soviet counter-espionage in the Soviet Eastern Europe division, where he had access to all the active spies working for the CIA and FBI? And he, along with another scumbag, Robert Hansen of the FBI, they betrayed the identities of a number of brave, honorable Soviet, I hate to use the term Soviet, but that's the side they were on, ostensible side they were on, Soviet intelligence assets that were recruited by the West. And also, how, if you look at this command structure at the various highest levels of the CIA, FBI, etc., they're always run by these globalist Luciferian types who knew what the game plan was. And they would install their minions who were either trustworthy, part of the network themselves, or were useful idiots whose arrogance and stupidity could be counted on to screw everything up. And that's just as effective for their purposes. So at the ground level, when you hear people say, oh, the whole East-West Cold War was a sham, it wasn't a sham for those Soviet spies working for the FBI and CIA who were being tortured by the thugs from the KGB Second Chief Directorate counterespionage. It wasn't a game for them. It wasn't a game for CIA assets who were caught and imprisoned in the Soviet gulags and in Chinese prisons. It wasn't a game, or it wasn't non-dangerous for the back-enders, NSA technician types who were flying at the back of these spy planes. They had no connection to the crews that flew the planes. They were essentially kept aloof from them. They weren't allowed to mingle with the crew, and the crew wasn't allowed to mingle with them. The crew's job was to fly the plane, and the back-enders were there to twiddle the knobs and electronically eavesdrop on Soviet and Chinese command and control systems. When those planes were shot down and the crews had to bail out, and those crews were never heard from again, the ones who managed to survive the ordeal, okay, it wasn't fake for them. Let's make that very clear. It was real for them. My father was being shot at by North Vietnamese Army and Viet Cong. That was real for them. My dad was in a brown water navy in Nam, two tours, Mekong Delta, Rungsat Special Zone. It was a real shooting war, fighting against real communists. Point being is that the higher levels of the bureaucracy are staffed with people who want communism and Luciferianism to take over. So they do everything to thwart within their own institutions any effort at combating and winning against communism. This is why the CIA was subverted so many times that after a while they were just completely helpless against the Soviets. And this notion that the CIA was caught flat-footed by the collapse of the Soviet Union, that's ridiculous. You even hear people that supposedly should know better, people that I regard pretty highly, you even hear them parroting that, oh, the CIA should have known. Well, at the highest levels, the CIA did know that Berlin Wall was coming down. Of course they knew. It just the minions, the underlings below them, weren't given that vital piece of intel. They were caught flat-footed at the lower levels. It wasn't a surprise to the higher-level people. So there are levels of deception all across the board. James Angleton, I just mentioned earlier, he had these acolytes that believed in this monster plot that every Soviet defector was a plant to infiltrate the CIA and disrupt it from within. He just assumed that they were all plants, all fakes. Does that sound familiar? With all you people out there that are accusing everyone of controlled opposition? And Angleton had this coterie of acolytes who he brainwashed into thinking just like him. One of them was, memory serves, a guy named Bagley. Now, Bagley was the leak to another leftist journalist, leftist writer, author, Edward J. Epstein, who wrote the book Legend, which I read. Legend was about how Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald, was really a communist agent. Complete nonsense. So they'll pretend that they're going after and exposing real communist agents, but really what they're doing is undermining everything. Here's what happened. Pete Bagley was one of Angleton's acolytes. Bagley leaked to Edward J. Epstein, the author of Legend about Lee Harvey Oswald, that the FBI had high-level Soviet spies under its wing that were working for the FBI, and they went by the cryptonyms Fedora and Top Hat. Top Hat was the cryptonym for General Dmitry Polyakov, a very high-level general in the Soviet military GRU, Soviet military intelligence, a long-standing asset mole that worked for the CIA and the FBI. Bagley specifically told Edward J. Epstein that this mole, Top Hat, worked in the UN Soviet mission in the 1960s. So automatically, the KGB second chief director at counterintelligence is going to narrow the list of suspects because there's only so many people, so many Soviets that worked in the Soviet UN mission in New York in the 1960s. So they're jeopardizing the life of a very productive, honorable man who's working against a corrupt system. And that wasn't the only time. There's a book written by Philip Agee called The Company, Inside Secrets of the CIA. I forget what the subtitle was. And people said, oh, look, this guy is a whistleblower. He's revealing all these dirty secrets of the CIA. Well, what he did was he revealed the names of actual CIA case officers, one of whom, Paul Dillon, was, by all accounts, an excellent CIA case officer. In fact, he thought that Angleton's monster plot theories were absolutely ridiculous and unfounded. And Paul Dillon was the agent handler for many years of the aforementioned General Dmitry Polyakov. So AG, in his book Inside the Company, reveals the names of active CIA officers, including Paul Dillon, thus effectively ending the career of one of the best agent handlers in the CIA at the time. Again, these are examples where using leaks, using the media, they're undermining their own anti-communist capabilities. And that's how it works. Edward J. Epstein should have been arrested for treason, for publishing information which could have compromised General Dmitry Polyakov. In the event, Polyakov was betrayed by Robert Hansen and later Eldridge Ames. Philip AG deliberately screwing up the CIA case officer, Paul Dillon, who basically had to retire because he was no longer capable of functioning. Some of James Angleton's acolytes actually wrote books about the monster plot. they're out there. Books like Wilderness of Mirrors, I forget the title exactly, but written by some of Angleton's acolytes. Again, put out this notion that there were no real Soviet defectors at that time, that they're all KGB plants. Just a heads up for my regular listeners, the members, I'm going to be delving more into military history, intelligence, counter-espionage history in the members segment. Not to show off or to make it seem like I know these things. I'm not an expert by any means. I know what I need to know. There are lessons to be learned, kernels of truth to be derived from studying such operations in the past. And I'm not going to give you the surface level mainstream history blarney about World War II. I'm going to tell you the things that really happened behind the scenes. I mean, there are some people that'll bore you to tears about World War II history. They know the muzzle velocity of the American 37 millimeter anti-tank cannon. They know exactly how much an M1 Garand rifle weighs, but they can't tell you why the war was even fought in the first place. I'm going to delve behind the scenes and I'm going to pull it forward so we can draw comparisons, correlations, etc. You surface level types, it's nuclear weapons don't exist. UFOs, aliens don't exist, blue beam, the earth is flat. Now, your latest fetish is germ versus terrain theory. And by germ, I guess you mean microbes, bacterium, pathogens of one sort or another. Perish the thought, viruses can actually exist. All of the above and much more. Microbes, whatever. Generally, under germ theory, you don't believe any of that is real. And it all comes down to the terrain. This kind of holistic, I'm vibing with the human resonance and my terrain inside my body's vibing with the human resonance and I'm impervious to all diseases, right? It all comes down to terrain, that's it. It's the be all and the end all. Well, here's a newsflash for you. In some campaigns in the Pacific in World War II and in Burma and in other tropical disease-rich places, for every one combat casualty, killed or wounded, there were up to 28 or more soldiers or Marines who were rendered hors du combat. In other words, they were rendered unfit for combat service. In fact, any kind of service. They were laid up in military hospitals or in what we would now call MASH units. Why? Because something got in and mucked with the terrain. Dengue fever, hemorrhagic fever, scrub typhus, malaria. For some of these tropical diseases, it doesn't matter if you mainline spirulina 10,000 cc's out of an IV drip 24/7. It doesn't matter. If some of these tropical diseases get in, you're going to be flat on your ass and be lucky to survive. Again, in some of the combat theaters in the Pacific in World War II, for every one combat casualty from enemy action, a bomb, a mortar shell, a sniper's bullet, whatever, a booby trap, whatever. For every one of those, up to 28 or more were laid out through tropical diseases. And you terrain types, you don't have an answer for that. Because to you don't understand the concept that things can get in, whether it's inhaled, whether it's ingested, whether it gets in through a tiny cut. In some of these tropical environments like New Guinea, the horrific New Guinea campaign, ask any American or Australian who's still alive who fought in New Guinea in World War II and just have them tell you about the horrific tropical diseases and the giant spiders. That terrain will grind you into the dust, into the mud, rather. And that's that. It doesn't matter about your terrain. Whether it's microbes, pathogens, bacteria, something got in. Something got in and mucked up the innards of these soldiers and Marines and sailors and Air Force personnel, whoever happened to be in those lousy theaters of war. How people can live in such places, let alone fight a war in them, is beyond me. But they got you surface level truthers coming and going. Flat Earth, nuclear weapons don't exist, therefore radiation doesn't exist. Microbes, pathogens, bacteria, viruses, none of that is real. It all comes under the dreaded category of germs, the nebulous umbrella term germs. And these surface level types, they take on to these fads or these trends with the zeal of a missionary. They want to correct everybody. They want to prove how superior and knowledgeable they are. Like now, all these pictures of Mel Gibson are popping up with his hand over one eye. And in some of these pictures, you see the flesh tone color of Mel Gibson's skin. He's usually got that nice tan, if if you know what I'm talking about. And then in one of the pictures, he's got an almost white albino hand over one of his eyes. I mean, albino would make like the late great Johnny Winter look like a black guy, okay? I mean, albino hand covering his face. Clearly, that's not Mel Gibson's hand. That's Photoshopped. It just shows you how easy it is to pe for people to be gulled and manipulated and have their emotions triggered by some of this stuff. It's just really sophomoric. And we're at the point now. These frauds who are constantly calling everyone controlled opposition, they need to be outed. I know who most of them are. I've interviewed some of them before for The Switch, right? And some of these clowns are on my Facebook friends list, and they're always ready to pounce. I call them pouncers. Pounce in with a meme. Oh, you believe in germs. Oh, you caught a cold and you've been sick for 2 weeks. You're falling for the germ theory. Like these people are completely dispassionate. They have no empathy. Some people are almost dying from, all the shedding that's going on. And see, that's another thing about these germ theory types, right? These terrain theory types, rather, is they're between a rock and a hard place with the shedding, because shedding has been for so long identified with viruses. And the terrain types don't want to hear about viruses. They say that none of that is real, none of that exists. Well, tell it to the germ warfare lab technicians, because they believe it exists. And their opinions and what they hold to be true, in this case, carries more weight with me compared to those of you that don't work in these germ warfare labs or pathogen labs, whatever is not so offensive for you. We got to come up with a safe space for, a lot of you terrain types. You get so easily triggered. But getting back to shedding, you see, there are people literally asymptomatic now. Now, when they said at the outset of the whole scamdemic that, oh yeah, well, one of the symptoms is no symptoms, but you're still infectious. And we all rolled our eyes and we laughed, rightfully so. We all laughed. Well, now, fast forward 2.5, 3 years, people that are asymptomatic that had been previously sick, but now they're pretty much over it, but they're, let's say, asymptomatic, they're going around infecting all these other people. There's other people are getting sick just by being around them. And some of the people, a lot of the people that are getting sick have never been stabinated. Isn't that interesting? They've never been stabbed, right? And they're still getting sick. So what the terrain types are essentially saying is, oh, no. Nature can't shed on you. All those tropical diseases, that's a conspiracy theory. That's like saying like Australia exists. We know from a flat Earth perspective, Australia is a hoax, okay? This is what the mindset is like. So they're saying in nature, viruses, that dreaded word again, or any other bug, cannot be passed to another person because that's part and parcel of the germ theory. So all those people, they've got constantly sick kids because they're always in amongst stabinated kids out in society, or people that have been around very sick people and were coughed at and later came down with infections. That's all part of the hoax. Okay. None of that is real. That's what these terrain types are saying. However, because they try to big shot you with what they know or they think they know, because they know the jargon, they know the lingo. And we all know about the nanotech, the graphene, et cetera, et cetera. So they'll blow all the smoke at you about graphene, yada, yada, yada. And they will even admit that you can shed from that. One can shed graphene from a stabinated person onto a non-stab person. They will accept that and even promote that. And I absolutely believe there's something to that. But they will never give credence to the notion that nature can come up with something, or even genetically enhanced nature, let's say, can come up with the same capability of shedding and passing on. I guess they never heard of chicken pox. They never heard of measles. They never heard of, Typhoid Mary. Like no one ever contaminates anyone else on this planet because, the terrain just takes care of all of that stuff. So when the next great big scamdemic or even real demic, if that's a word, comes out, then these terrain types will just be screaming, oh no, it's all a computer-generated gene sequence model, which is a different argument, okay? Don't conflate the two. Dr. David Martin, He's absolutely right that they never actually have a real isolated virus of the dreaded thing that we've been battling with the last few years. It's never been isolated. It's just a computer-generated gene sequence. That's a different argument, a different point than the germ and terrain theory, but they like to conflate the two, okay? So anyway, enough said about that. That's just me getting it off my chest. I'm tired of these self-righteous, missionary zeal type proponents of whatever the new fad is, flat earth, nuclear weapons don't exist, Project Bluebeam, and now the germ and terrain argument. Tell it to all the combat vets in the Pacific and other places, Italy, Sicily, parts of North Africa, those campaigns, lots of malaria there too. All those people were rendered null and void by something that got in. And whether it got in through an insect bite, foul water, whatever the case may be, it got in. So anyhow, I just wanted to talk about those subjects. For those of you who like what we do and you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see the members at the top of the next segment.